Bret Hart Radio is presented by Sharpshooter Funding in association with PodcastArena.com and Gao Media.
Are you a small business looking to get over, but you don't have all the funds you need? Well, there's a solution. Check out sharpshooterfunding.com. At Sharpshooter Funding, they know that they have a solution to fit your specific needs. Their team has the experience and knowledge to find you the best product for your specific situation. Whether you're a first-time customer or a repeat business partner, their team will fulfill your needs. Give them a ring at 416-238-0252. That's 416-238-0252. Or send an email to dallas@sharpshooterfunding.com.
It's time to go down to the dungeon and visit the Hart Family Vault. The Hart Family Vault. This is Bret Hart Radio.
All right, we're going to get ready to open up the Hart Family Vault, and I want to welcome back as my team. I got the inflappable Nick Houseman. I got my son Blade Hart, and we're welcoming him back from an exhausting trip to Thailand. My son Dallas is back. He survived. He's alive. He didn't find himself getting his head chopped off in some foreign part of the island or anything like that.
Still got all my organs.
He's really happy to be back. He's all part of the team again.
Yeah. Thank you for having me back there, podcast land.
Sweet painted ladies and a bottle of wine.
How was Thailand, Dallas? Tell us about your experience.
It was really good. It was interesting. I've never actually left North America before, so it was a first time for everything over there. I think it was a once kind of thing for me. I don't know if I'd go back, but I got to go to a Tiger Muay Thai gym and do some training there for a little bit, just as a little something to do. So it was pretty cool. They got some UFC fighters there, a bunch of other MMA guys coming up. And it was a huge facility. I think it's one of the biggest ones in Thailand. So it was an honor to be there.
Well, here we are inside the Hart Family Vault. And we got a lot for you guys here today. Of course, we're going to be featuring part two of our interview with Dylan Postle, a.k.a. a former WWE superstar, Hornswoggle. We've also got our 4 and 10 out of 10. And, of course, the hashtag Ask the Hitman. But this show here today, as always, we got to put over our sponsor at the top, sharpshooterfunding.com or Sharpshooter Funding. Dallas, what is going on right now with Sharpshooter Funding? What would you like to tell people about in the world of Sharpshooter Funding?
Well, Nick, I just got back, so I'm still trying to get back to work and understanding everything what I've missed. But, same as always, small, medium businesses, we're here to help you. So come check us out. We're here on, I can't even remember the damn website now.
www.sharpshooterfunding.com.
There you go. Blade's got good at this in the last month.
Should have asked Blade that this week.
Spicing it up.
Plug.
Yeah, you're there.
And I got to make a couple of apologies about names. I guess I called the UFOs from the UFOs. I should know that, but you lose track sometimes.
You called Paul Pitcher.
I got a lot of respect for them, so I want to say now that I apologize for getting their names wrong. Just was a daily one of those one-time mistakes.
Sure.
But also Paul Pritchard, it's Paul Pitcher.
Sure.
And the Japanese wrestler that you like, his name is Nakamura.
Nakimura, not Nakibono.
Nakamura.
He's a sumo wrestler.
Macaroni.
And it's Shinsuke, not Shinsky, while we're correcting all of your...
Nick Houseman.
Houseman.
Deepest
and Nick, I'm Blade. I'm not Dallas. Dallas is Dallas, so I'm Blade.
Thank you.
Let's just clear the air.
We need a big whiteboard in here. Start writing these things out.
This is the Harpooter podcast with Bret Hart, right?
Yeah.
Brent Hunt.
Parp shooter.
This has gone so well to start the show here today. If you like this content and you want more of this content, go over to iTunes, find Bret Hart Radio, subscribe. It's absolutely free. You get two shows a week. Leave us a 5-star rating. The comments always help. Of course, podcastarena.com to find more shows there. And last but not least, the big push. The push is on. We have time to go here. We are pushing for the Hart Foundation into the WWE Hall of Fame. go to the Hart Foundation for Hall of Fame.com to go sign the petition to have the WWE induct the whole Hart Foundation, from Brett to Jim to Owen to Davey and Brian Pillman. Pillman, is he's in the Hart Foundation as well, correct?
All correct.
Of course. Yeah, of course. So go cast your vote, guys, or go sign the petition, HartFoundationForHallOfFame.com. And with that, let's kick it off here today with part two of our interview with none other than former WWE superstar Hornswoggle, a.k.a. Dylan Possel.
I like to miss the old tag team days of wrestling where tag teams would come in and build up until two big teams had to wrestle each other. Why yeah. WWE has basically killed off tag team wrestling and never allows any team to get over long enough to sort of make the belts mean something.
Thank God for New Day. Thank God for those guys.
Like the UFOs and certain guys, to me, they there's years of marketing money and easy to draw money with guys that are natural teams and brothers.
Yep.
and great athletes and great workers and well-spoken characters in wrestling and stuff. And, you know, I saw years ago that they could have done a lot with some of these tag teams, and instead they seemed like they build them up and knock them down. I mean, I've seen the UFOs lose more matches than they've won, kind of thing. And it's like, I don't know why, you know, like I miss a lot in wrestling. Like I don't see a lot every match and every show, but sometimes there's the opportunity to start to build great tag teams again, and they always seem to tear them down and not let them really get enough momentum going to really. Seems like tag team wrestling's been dead for 15 years or so, in my opinion. Maybe 20.
You have like New Day when they were running with the Usos, and when Kid and Cesaro were together and they were running with Usos and New Day, you had that shine of tag team wrestling for a bit there. And then Tyson goes and Cesaro go down with injuries. Now Cesaro's back. Then Usos kind of go down with an injury here, or do they, you know, they get kind of lost in the shuffle. And New Day is now carrying the tag division and carrying it quite well. They're I think they're the most entertaining thing on Raw, it seems, lately. And they're all great guys, and they're hell of an athletes, all of them, all three of them are. And they're just very entertaining.
I like the storyline they got going with the Wyatts. You know,
yeah, it's a different.
Fun, good sort of a different kind of storyline for them, because they're not so much cartoon kind of.
Yeah.
And so it's a chance for New Day. They're taking on a more serious role, which coming off of all the stuff they've done now, where people are starting to really like them and to find them fun, and they start to get attached to them, emotionally connected to them. And that's all really good. And now they're going into a storyline that's, these guys are very unpredictable, kind of scary kind of storyline. It's I like it. I like the mix. I like the and it's good for Wyatt and all those guys to sort of find themselves working with New Day, because it's a different kind of style, different kind of thinking that goes into the match. I love that. I remember years ago, when I was just before I won the championship for the first time, I think they threw me in some tag matches with it was me and the Bushwhackers against the Nasty Boys, and might have been Jock Rougeau, I think.
Or Repo. Maori Repo Man would have done a random one here and there, too.
Yeah, but they were fun. I remember it was so much fun to sort of, and for the fans to see me kind of come down and work. You know, I got the Bushwhackers in a headlock, and I'm running them into everybody, and they're knocking, everyone's bouncing all over the ring and stuff. But it was so... just so not Bret Hart style. Like, that's not what Bret Hart does. But it was, I remember the fans going crazy. They loved it. It was so much fun. And we're bouncing the Nasty Boys all over the ring. And we did the little dance at the end where we marched around the ring and the place went crazy. I remember it was like, it was just for a little bit, but it was fun. And it was, I know every fan that ever watched it probably loved it and still remembers it. You know, it was a great little storyline, a great mix of, taking me out of my usual role and putting me in a fun role, and I like that.
That was always some of the most fun about house shows on the road is seeing guys, you know, you'd see a Cena or even, you know, these tough guys have a little more fun and interact with the crowd a little bit, or just be laughing at what's going on, or if they are in a random tag match, doing some fun stuff and some ha-ha at the end of the night to send the crowd home happy. And it's just those house shows. I always told, like, my friends back home, I said, if you have a chance to go to a house show, those are almost more fun than TV tapings because they're a lot more fan interactive.
And they're less stress.
Yeah.
They're a lot more fun for the boys. Yeah, the guys are more comfortable and more relaxed. There's no pressure onto. So they go out there and they just swim with the role and have fun and roll with the punches. And it's a lot easier. TV tapings are very stressful. Whenever that TV's on, there's a lot more pressure and it's all on camera.
Yep. How did you enjoy the multiple tapings, or did the crowd get burnt out by, you know, the second or third taping of the night when they would do Raw multiple times?
You know, I always, you know, for the most, you know, sometimes they would die out. You know, I mean, I think, but I don't know that it was, you know, I can remember always going out, like, especially when I was advertising the dark match. Like, I remember one time, I think it was in Glens Falls TV tapings, and I was wrestling Yokozuna in a cage match, and the place was still packed, and they had three TV shows all. They taped three or four hours of wrestling, and they were so burnt out. And I remember Pat and Vince came up, and they told me, he said, just go 1 minute. And I'm like, I can remember I told Pat, I said, I can't do that. I just can't go out there and shortchange all these people, even though it's a dark match and we're not, you know, it's not part of the TV show. But they've been waiting all night because the show's been all promos and this.
Oh, we lost you there for a second, Brett. I know it sounds like you guys are in the middle of a big storm right now in Canada right now. So I think that's why the signal's been a little in and out.
All right. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you're good. Yeah, Blade told us about the storm you guys are going through right now. So
yeah.
You're good.
Yeah, it's pouring down here right now. Yeah. All right. But so what were we talking about before you cut me off?
Why am I taking the heat? I've done nothing this interview. I'm done.
Vincent Pat told you to go 1 minute in the dark match with Yoko.
I remember Yoko went the full 20-minute cage.
Whoa, 1 second. You sound like a robot. You good?
Okay, can you hear me now? I just did the full 20-minute cage match time. We were roughly going 20 minutes. But I remember it's like as tired as they were waiting for a match. And I always thought, you know, they paid for one good match here tonight that's not a TV match and not a bullshit match and not going to be a 1 minute. And I could have jumped up. Pat and all of them were down the road a minute later. It didn't make any difference to them. But I always felt that the fans, if they waited all night to see me wrestle, I'm going to give them a real wrestling match. I would never cut corners. I always took a lot of pride in my work.
And plus, you'd have had to get all warmed up to do 1 minute. That would be a waste of the warm-up.
Yeah, take Yoko 1 minute to climb up.
I want to get Brett. Brett, did you ever see Dylan's WLC match with him and Torito?
You know, I don't think I did.
Oh.
As soon as I get off this show, I'm going to look it up on the WWE Network. My plug for them for the day.
Yeah, $9.99, right?
I'm gonna try to watch that. I'd love to see it. I know that you were like I said, a real midget wrestler that did the business for before you got into sort of just being a sort of a character on the show, and I always liked guys that did the job. So I'd like to watch your work.
That was easily the defining moment of my career. I gotta say that that match was the one that I'm most proud of in literally, you know, almost 15 years of wrestling. That's my one. So. Yeah.
Well, you know what I'm saying. That one. I'm glad that I'm going to make a point of watching it, and I hope everyone that listened to the show today will stop and actually look at and watch that match back and see what you know. For you to come on a show and say that was your highest moment or your highlight of your career, and that's great. I'd be honored to go and watch it and to look at watch it back and appreciate the all that goes into a great match.
It was we had Finley as one of our producer agents for that match, and I always say in the business he is one of the, if not the smartest man. You know, that people always say Pat Patterson and that for finishes. Fit I truly believe is right up there with him. Just he single-handedly trained or like molded all the girls, you know, from Lita and Trish on. When WCW closed down, he came over and he was in charge of the girls. And he always took every one of them under his wing and molded it.
I know
every
Natty,
one of them.
Natalya would say the same thing that you just said.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, tell me if I'm wrong, but when he got into that trouble a few years ago where they let him go, it was not the same anymore. They lost the genius
of...
Yeah,
look at what happened to the girls for a while there, for a good year and a half.
He was a very valuable guy that they couldn't replace, and I think that's why they brought him back, as they realized that. And it was such a petty, silly little thing they let him go over to. It was something to do with the anthem, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Sing it. I think it was in Canada, wasn't it?
No, it was in the States.
You're right. It was in the States for the yes. What I'm thinking of is the one time when La Resistance was going to burn the American flag, and they've interrupted the American national anthem with the Canadian stuff all the time, but then Fit does it on a house show, and it's the end of the world.
Well, it was because the coast was there. There was sitting military that was there that I think was offended.
It's pro wrestling.
But I think they still made too much of it.
Yeah, it's pro wrestling.
What do you think about that? That's what happened with that guy that got suspended for grabbing Vince a few weeks ago.
You know, it's with Titus there. You never know. You know, sometimes I feel it was almost too comfortable. And you know, at times I don't know. Would you, if you're in an office job and your boss came walking past, would you grab your boss and wrestle around with him? I don't know.
Is that the kind of thing that that he did all the time?
I didn't see it. I wasn't on the road, so I didn't see it. But I don't know. And it might have just been at the wrong time, you know, with the Daniel Bryan stuff and happening right then. Who knows? Was it just at the wrong time? I can't say because I wasn't there. But I just, who knows? Who knows the mind frame of anyone at that point.
Well, you're right, though. I mean, you can't just go up and grab your boss around the neck whenever you feel like it, kind of thing. And you got to be careful of that kind of stuff. I mean, I see this is a guy saying that, the guy that clotheslined Vince in a bar.
Clothesline Vince at a bar? First of all, I want to know what the heck happened there. How did that
come? I've never heard this one. I've heard a lot of stories from you, but I've never heard that one.
That's my favorite one of all time.
One of the big ones. We all went to end up at a strip bar. It's when they started the drug testing.
Oh my God. Okay.
And Vince had the meeting that day. If you remember, me wrestling, what was his name? Skinner. At that one night
Steve
in Texas, Kern. It was a pay-per-view. Yeah, we wrestled, and it was after that show. It was before that show earlier in the day that Vince had told everyone that they were starting the Olympic drug testing, and they had that guy named Pasquale out of Montreal with the doping for the Olympians and all that, and he was in charge. And Vince told everyone that basically the gig was up, steroids, any kind of drugs, marijuana, anything was, you were going to be checked. And if you were guilty, you were two strikes, you were out. And that was all there is. They were all same rules for everybody. And I can remember that everyone was more concerned about that there was going to be no more smoking weed. And and that was the big thing. And all I know is that night Vince ended up at a strip bar with all the wrestlers, and he was totally shit-faced and really in a party mode. And we partied all night long and in the bar. And I remember it was Hogan started a little rib. I think it was a rib, but he got a Hawk all stirred up, and Hawk was all totally knackered. And he was Hawk was talking about he was going to do the Legion of Doom finish on Vince, where they clothesline him off the And I remember like Neidhart's ears perked up, and everyone kind of ears came up because they wanted to see, because Hawk was crazy enough to do it, and Hulk was really stirred him up. And next thing you know, I see Joe and Hawk going over to find Vince, and they came up right behind him. Joe did, and scooped him up and on his shoulders, and Hawk was up on the pole where the strippers are, and he jumped off and clotheslined Vince. And I everyone thought that Hawk was going to take Vince's head off, you know, hit him as hard as he could. but when Hawk was talking like he was going to take Vince's head off, and just as he got ready to do his finish, or like when he did do it, he gave him this real powder puff little clothesline, and everybody, ever Hulk and Beefcake and everybody, caught Vince very carefully, and they set him on the ground, and everyone was clapping, kind of, it was all in good fun, and nobody got hurt, and Vince was laughing. And I remember Neidhart got so mad, and he really got upset. And I remember he looked at me, he goes, Hart Foundation would have done it. And I remember then, I think I said something like, yeah, we would have done it, or something like that. And then I remember I had two shots at Jack Daniels, one in each hand. And I remember looking around, and all of a sudden I realized what I said with Jim. And all of a sudden I turned around, and Jim had Vince up in the bear hug and the Hart Foundation move. And I just remember Hogan and a bunch of guys looking at me like, are you going to do it, or are you just going to do a powder puff one too? And I just took his head off. I just took store right off and clotheslined Vince right in the bar, took him right to the ground. I remember our heads both banging on the cement carpet.
Wow.
And I can remember Vince looking at me while we were lying down on the ground, and he turned his head to me, and I was just lying flat right beside him, because there was no, with that move, with that flying clothesline I used to do, yeah, the only way to do it is you got to swing your legs and up in the air and land right on your back shoulder blade, so back, you don't get hurt. And same with Vince. I pulled him down. I protected his head and everything, but we landed with a pretty good thud on the ground. And Vince looked at me and he said, you owe me a drink. And I thought, that's the last thing Vince needs is another drink. But I said, what are you drinking? He goes, Dewar's on Ice. I never ever forgot that. It was Dewar's on Ice, and I got him a drink. And you know, next day we went to a room, and everybody went to Flair's room for a party. And I remember Vince peeing on a mattress in Flair's room, peeing on Flair's bed. Yeah, you know, it was quite a night. I remember Vince wrestling with guys on the carpet on the floor of the hotel room at the San Antonio Marriott. And we all partied in Flair's room till about 5 in the morning, and then we all finally left. But it was quite a night. And I thought, geez, I don't know what I was. I can remember talking to Vince. Maybe a year or two, 3 years later, and he had surgery on his neck. And he said, I don't know, somehow I hurt my neck. He goes, I'll never know what I did. He goes, I remember hurting it. And I said, maybe it's that time I clotheslined you in the bar in San Antonio. And I can remember Vince sort of thinking about it like real hard, and then all of a sudden looking at me going, maybe it was. You know, and I'm thinking, maybe I shouldn't have brought that up, you know.
The surgery bill will be in the mail.
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe that's secretly where the whole screw job came around. It's like, now remind myself to get this guy somewhere down the road.
Wow, that is an amazing story. That was just excellent.
It's in my book. It's in my book test.
Yeah, it's what TJ's saying here right now in the old producer's box here. Well, Dylan, I know that we don't have all the time in the world here with you. Is there anything else you wanted to bring up or ask Brett or say here before we wrap up with you today?
I gotta bring up a funny little story here, because if I didn't, my buddy back home would kill me, and he's gonna love it even more. So he is your a fanatic of yours, Brett. I brought, when I met you, when you were coming back, and I met you the first time, I brought a DVD and your book for you to sign. The DVD was his. The funniest, we tell the story to all of our new trainees, because I run a school and a company back home, and we tell all of them come to find out about it. But I brought the book, and you signed it to me, and then I give you the DVD, and without, I was like so just in awe of you signing everything, that you signed the book, the DVD to me as well. It was my buddy's DVD, so now I get home, and I give it back to him, and he goes, "Oh man, this is really nice. If my name was Dylan," And it's the greatest thing because he was so excited to get this DVD back signed by his hero that, and then it was signed to me. So now I have it right in my bar in my basement. So every time he has a drink, he can look at it. And the surlier he gets during the night, he gets more and more angry about that DVD, just looking him right in the eye as well. So it's probably the greatest. My top Bret Hart moments is just to mess with one of my buddies back home.
Well, one of my favorite memories since we're dumping out on each other, I can just vaguely remember it was like somewhere in England, and I can remember a small person running up and down the halls and is covered in shaving cream. Nothing else. And I'm not sure if I dreamed it or if it was just white fire.
I think you dreamed it. I think it was more dream. Because I don't know who would have done that in England. They have very high security over there. I don't think anyone would have ever done that or chanced English security, you know? I probably would have. So if it was me, I would never deny it, but it couldn't have been me, of course.
Clearly this little person was quite inebriated, and it's hard to say because, I mean, you know, you cover someone head to toe in shaving cream, there's a good chance you could be wrong about who's underneath there. But
that's what I'm saying. It might have been a child. Who knows? It might have been a child.
A small kid, or maybe a bear cub or something like that.
A shaved bear. I think it was a shaved bear. We were right near a zoo, I think. But it was probably me.
Wow.
Did that shaved bear have a Wisconsin accent?
We don't have accents in Wisconsin.
It's conceivable. He didn't really say a lot when he flew by. It was almost not, you know, you had to kind of pinch yourself as to whether it was true or not.
The person probably couldn't have said much in his state.
I think I recall John Cena. Maybe I dreamed it. Maybe he's like, man, I think I've dreamed John Cena chasing you. But maybe I'm wrong.
I think it was a bear. I think it was a bear cub.
Wow. You guys have way cooler stories than, like, you know, people that have other normal jobs, by the way. People that work at Best Buy, they don't have these stories. Just saying, throwing that out there.
Yeah, right. they have, oh, we dropped a TV today, or we dealt with a really unruly customer about an iPod charger. Right. There was a midget running in the hallway.
Right.
Covered. Yeah.
Well, that's the beauty of the business that we were in. And, you know, I think that's basically what we've been doing for the last hour, talking about.
Yeah.
There's a certain joy and passion that's kind of, you know, in a lot of ways, it's all just entertainment. And at the same time, people take it pretty serious. And it's an interesting job. I remember when I did construction before I got into wrestling, I used to hate lunch hour and talking at the coffee breaks because it was just nothing that it was of any interest to me. But once I got into wrestling and you stuck me in a van with 16 wrestlers or 15 wrestlers all sitting side by side and they'd start telling stories and, like I say, there'd be midget wrestlers working there and different guys. It was always a lot of fun. And then you started to see this brotherhood of wrestlers that it's a group of people that unlike UFC and some of those kind of entertainments, pro wrestling, the whole objective is to entertain and to not get hurt and to have fun. And that's what comes out. And there's a certain love and trust that you get from working with your comrades and getting better and better and more creative in your work. And there's a real just a sort of underneath flow that goes with wrestling. And, I loved all the characters in it. Some of my favorite characters. I mean, I was at Appearance just a few weeks ago and I was really hoping I was going to see King Kong Bundy, who was one of my favorite wrestlers in the business. He was always so much fun to be around. And just the thought talking today about Bundy and him squashing Little Beaver or whoever it was great stuff. I loved it. Yeah. I loved my short time with Dylan and a lot of the little people that I worked with through my career. They were always a lot of fun and very interesting people to work with.
Yeah. And with that, I mean, I guess we might see you guys show up on a show together now. I know you guys are both taking independent bookings and, you know, you guys are both big name draws. So hopefully you guys get to do something here together real soon. And with that, Dylan, where do you want to send people to support you online or out there? They can find me.
Well, you can't say we're both big name. You cannot put me in the same category as him, but I'm a, I'm a, I'm a decent name draw. I'll say that. But to hopefully, I'm very much hoping to run into Brett on a show or a convention here coming up. Get caught up.
Are you throwing the glove down? Like, is that like you challenging me to come out of retirement?
No, never, ever. But I'm
still.
And
anytime you want a title shot and you want to step in the ring with the Hitman,
I will meet you in the bar after the show.
It could be done.
I could possibly hang with you in the bar.
I could come out of retirement and have that dream match.
Oh man!
It would have to be something at stake.
Yeah,
maybe your friend could be in a cage, held up over the ring.
Yeah, lift him high in a cage. He'd break out of it just to be a fanboy for you. So that would be.
Or maybe we could have a taser or a staple gun or something above the ring, and it's like whoever loses, you got to take the staple gun.
That's just too much for me.
A taser.
Yeah, I didn't know you had.
If you do want to book Bret Hart versus Hornswoggle in a staple gun match, you can reach me at bookhornswoggle@gmail.com or on Twitter at WWE Hornswoggle. This has been awesome. I'm getting interviewed by Bret Hart, one of the best of all time, if not the best of all time. It's an honor. It's awesome.
I'm liking a sort of a cattle prod match, maybe, except for I would have a big cattle prod. You'd have a little tiny one.
It'd be a little lighter.
We'd still make it fair. We give you a valet or something.
I would need the cattle prod surrounding the ring.
Yeah. You know what? I'll be in Dylan's corner, and then you can bring Blade and Dallas, and then
No.
We'll take Nick outside and beat him down to the ground for maybe 12 and a half minutes.
I need his sons in my corner too. They're big. They're tough guys. I want them.
That's true. I'll be in Brett's corner. You can have Blade and Dallas. That'll make it like kind of fair, because then I'm holding you back, Brett. Awesome. Right? And they're all young and spry on the other side of the arena. You know, the ring.
Yeah, there's a possibility that I may show up with a chained squirrel. chained in my corner. I want my listeners to know that we've successfully extracted the squirrel.
Oh, thank God.
He was saved, and he's safe out in the trees now. And
humanely.
Might have got hit by lightning, but we don't know.
Yeah, it'd be his luck to get hit by lightning as soon as he left the house.
Dylan, listen to the podcast, right, and you'll hear the squirrel story. It's all there.
I can't wait.
It's time for 4 out of 10. 4 out of 10.
I give it a 4 out of 10.
A nod to those who failed to excellently execute. 4 out of 10 on Bret Hart Radio.
Okay, this week for my 4 out of 10, you know, I've given great thought to it, and I think that I got to pin that on the Brexit sort of storyline going on right now. It seems to me that all these people in England are miscalculated and want a second chance and have changed their mind about leaving the union. They never thought it would happen, especially after all it's a financial meltdown, you know, starting to look really bad all around the world and it's affecting everybody. And it's like, you know, I got to blame them for not doing their homework and not looking at how serious this was going to affect everyone's life. I think if you look at the, you know, what is it, the Prime Minister of England, Cameron or whatever, he never stopped talking about how much of a catastrophe this was going to be. And they all voted to leave. And no, not all, but it's almost a 50-50 vote. It's something that is going to have huge ramifications. And I think 4 out of 10 would be fair. Or if not, it may have trouble passing as a 4 out of 10.
Do you get worried when you see that like, people aren't going to do their research on a guy like Trump and they're just going to cast a protest vote, speak?
It seems like it's happening everywhere. The Philippines got a weirdo kind of nutcase president of the Philippines now. And, you know, you tell me, you guys have got elected Trump or going to elect him or try to. And I don't know. It's scary. I fear a guy like Trump having the buttons, especially if reporter calls him out on having small hands or something like that, and it's like, you know, he's gonna push the button, he's gonna go crazy.
Hey, do you have a guest room up there for me and Hausman come November?
Yeah, we're gonna
we got a tree that we can sort of work building sort of a treehouse, and you guys live out there with the squirrel.
All right. Rent is going to triple.
You bring up the squirrel. Now, we have some resolution here. Rolling over. Now, if you listened to Tuesday's show, you heard the show started with you, Blade, and Dallas talking about this squirrel. Now, we have an update on the squirrel. Is that right?
Yeah, they caught the squirrel, managed to, exercise him and get him outside and released him into the wild. And he's out there. He's actually waving from the fence. I see him now. I'm waving back. You can't see that, but I'm waving back at him. And he's good.
Wow.
He's alive.
Dallas played a key part.
Dallas did a big part.
I had to hold him down with a hockey stick to his throat while the other guy, the squirrel master, cut him free with a knife. It's about as Canadian as you get.
What was he? What did he have wrapped around him? Was it string? What was it?
No, he got his one leg
traps.
And
those little glue sticky traps.
Oh.
And we were gonna, put an end to him, but we decided to try to get him, cut him free, and
they couldn't find the lighter fluid in a match, so they thought, keep him going.
But we'll give a 10 out of 10 to the pest control company, Dad. You wanna?
Yeah, Can-X Pest Control, my good friend Mike.
There you go.
They were great. They
in the greater Calgary
saved
area.
The day.
Free plug.
That's a free
plug. Not only were good and kind to the squirrel, like I say, he's waving.
He asked, though. He asked if we wanted to put him down, and we did
to smack him against the wall.
That's what I thought he was going to do.
I was just going to give him an Al McKinnis slap shot across the kitchen.
Put him under the back tire of the truck and figure it out from there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Tough way to go.
That is rough. And I'm sure the squirrel is probably not mentally right after this whole ordeal. Like, he's going to have to live with the memories of what happened inside the Hart household here today.
If he was a Triple H fan before, Nick, he's a Hitman fan now.
If you look really closely, you'll see that this little squirrel is out on the fence, like, kind of jumping up and waving. But he's actually looking, if you look close, he's got a little pair of Hitman shades on. Yeah.
I think he knows that we saved him.
Wow.
He knows that we cut him free, and he was.
Which reminds me, I got to let the cat out of the garage. So
yeah. All right. Well, we're gonna wrap up the show here for this week. Every week we go into the mailbag. If you'd like to submit a question for Brett Blade or Dallas, hashtag Ask the Hitman, and we're gonna go over to the UK. A question from one of our UK listeners here, Dan Yeomans at Dan Yeomans blog. He says, I'm starting wrestling training next month in the UK. I'm 30 years old. Realistically, have I left it too late? And then he also says, you're his hero, Brett. Is 30 too old to begin wrestling training?
30's never too old. It's harder. I mean, for sure, if he was 20 years old, he'd have much better chances. But 30 years old, you're not that old. You're still in pretty good form, and you're still young enough, and you can make the necessary adjustments to being a great pro wrestler still at 30. But it's a little harder. It gets a little harder every year that you don't go. Like, if it's something you're going to think about when you're 20, you should probably get going on it, because you don't want to be doing it after 25 to 30. It gets harder every year that you wait, and then when you get, say, in your 30s. You know, it's all about whether how well educated you are in wrestling, sort of like whether you've watched it a lot growing up and you sort of understand it. And it's not so much the physical aspect of it. It's the sort of the mental aspect that if you get in it too late, like when you're 30, it takes a long time to sort of figure out what's going on and understanding how it really works. But 30's still young enough. I wouldn't hang up your hopes on that.
Randy Couture.
DDP. DDP did it.
Dallas Page, yeah, he was working in a strip bar, and they got him a job being a manager in wrestling or whatever it was, and next thing you know, he's U.S. champ, taking on Bret the Hitman Hart. You know,
Randy Couture was 33 when he made his UFC debut. Okay, no one cares about an American hero. Sorry, guys.
We're Canadian.
Who? Who's Randy Couture?
Randy, who?
You really don't know who Randy Couture is? Greatest UFC
ever? No,
we
know. We know.
Oh, jeez.
We know. Come
he's
on.
He's in the Expendables. Come on. The greatest movie of all time, The Expendables.
So Blade Dallas, of course, this means, 30's not too young. So are you guys going to give it another go here? Are we going to get the Grape Smugglers, the greatest tag team in all of
the Flying Grape Smugglers? I'm
showing that white skin.
We got Métis. We're Aboriginal, man. I'm tan like a bronze statue.
Yeah, white as ghosts.
We're taller.
I'm more tan than you.
Yeah, all those white chickens at the supermarket, and you see the chickens, like the goosebumps or whatever they got all on them.
Oh my. Maybe we would have a Charlotte and Flair kind of angle where we drop Dad on his head, suplex him off the rope.
We'll give you the heart attack. I'll pick you up.
That's where they're wrong. That's why I turned into Stu Hart all of a sudden, just take them both down. School them in
shit.
Little pretzel work. Dad, stop.
You're hurting me.
Bret Hart Radio is a TJ DeSantis production. In association with Nick Houseman and Sharpshooter Funding, Bret Hart Radio. Its content is intended for private use only.